Companies mentioned herein are for illustrative purposes only, not intended as solicitation of the purchase of such securities, and do not constitute any investment advice or recommendation.
Hello, my name is Ulrich Fugman, and I'm joined by my business partner, Edward Lees, through 22 years.
And together, we run BNP Paribas Asset Management's Environmental Strategies Group. We're going to introduce you to a series of executives, all at the top of their field, for companies introducing exciting environmental solutions into the marketplace. You'll learn about their personal motivations, a bit about their companies as well, and we hope you find this informative. So with that in mind, let's meet our guest.
I'm delighted to have John Berger here today, the CEO and founder of Sunnova, one of the biggest US residential solar companies. And John will be talking to us today about residential solar, what it is, what's motivated John to go into residential solar, and where the future will take us. So thank you very, very much, John, for being here today.
And thank you for having me.
Making the way to London. Thank you. John, could you tell us a bit about, just to start with, US residential solar? What is it and why is it important?
Well, certainly. So US residential solar, it has gone through a lot of changes, and we see a few more changes happening over the next few years, and we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But essentially, it's putting solar panels on behind the meter on single family homes. That has now changed where you had more intelligent inverters. Sometimes those are string, sometimes those are optimized by on a per panel basis. Sometimes the inverter, it's what they call a microinverter, is put on the panel itself. And essentially it generates electricity when there's sunlight. So there's, a lot of people seem to think that heat is involved and so forth, and that's not true. You just need some sunlight, even a little bit, including in London here, is enough to generate some electricity. And of course, those panels have been getting more efficient, and they've been getting a lot cheaper. So as the power is produced to the homeowner, they're still connected to the respective grid or monopoly. And essentially, that monopoly fills in the holes where the load, where you're turning on the air conditioner, where you're turning on the stove, whatever it is, and charging your car now. And it fills in the holes from where the solar is producing the power for the home. And then when the solar panels and the inverters and the whole system produces so much power that the home doesn't need it, then it's pushing it back into that centralized monopoly system. In the States, we have it used to be somewhat consistent, but now it's become very different, what we call net metering, to offset the power generation and from when the generation of the power is so high, it goes back into the utility and then offset it at night when there's not any solar, because it's not any light being produced, then the utility gives that back for free, hence net metering. But you're not selling back to utilities, you're not doing anything like that, like merchant power or anything of that nature. Now with batteries, you don't need to do all that, and now you're keeping your power there at your house. But most importantly, you have higher reliability than what you can get out of the centralized system, no matter how much money is thrown at that respective monopoly or utility, however you want to phrase it. And so the business is changing all the way to the point that we see that as Sunnova, see ourselves as a wireless power company where we can provide with other technologies out there. It becomes more intelligent, whether you're adding a generator, a fuel cell, load management, EV charging, all together, is that you can provide maybe all the power that home needs. And certainly more and more consumers want that because that grid may be down due to climate change impacts, wildfires, hurricanes, typhoons, winter storms where there shouldn't be. A bunch of different things have happened and continue to happen with more frequency, and that customer wants that generation to have the life that they want, what we call is living life uninterrupted.
Great. Thanks, John, for that context. It would be real nice to hear a little bit more about you now. Maybe you could tell us a bit about your motivation for starting Sunnova and some of the things that Sunnova does differently, and maybe a bit about how the company aims to have impact.
Certainly. So just a brief background. I grew up in Texas, where, of course, oil and gas is king. We're changing that. We're changing that. But it really got me interested in going the energy business. And so right after I got a civil engineering degree from Texas A&M, I went to Houston and started working in the power business, much to my surprise, and started trading power, running even a utility from the control room at a very early age. And in doing a bunch of different things as far as derivative structuring, look at international markets, new power plants. So really on the physical and the financial side of things. And I came to realize that the power system we have is pretty archaic. Even you look across not just the United States, but globally. And I truly believe that the energy business, and this is what got me going, is in the 90s, of course, the internet's coming of age, if you will. And the energy business is what looks like the last major industry to really join the digital age from the industrial age. And I thought, you know what? The world is overdue for a change in energy, and it's overdue for a transportation change as well. If you look at the timelines over the last millennia or so, we were overdue. And so I wanted to be a part of that change. So I got involved with that, went to business school in Boston, did a lot of venture capital, worked for the government, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, started getting involved in venture caps, trying to find the technologies, and fell into solar and said, you know what, I think the cost is going to come down. This is sometime in around in the 2006, 2007 time period. And so I founded my first solar company. It was a contractor, installed solar. And I sold that a couple of years later and then started another business like Sunnova. And what we would do is we would have the contractor as a dealer, and then we would go out and own the customer, the contract, and the system, which is what Sunnova does. And we would be a service provider, which is exactly what Sunnova is. And we would do the financing as an enablement and so forth. And I sold that business to a big power company very quickly within the first year. So I looked at that as, well, that worked, and started Sunnova in very late 2012. And we originated our first customer in 2013. I think it's interesting being headquartered, founding the company in Houston. I've got all kinds of stories about having a grudge apartment, really, or a downtown Houston apartment where we founded the company in. And now, of course, it's a multi-billion dollar New York Stock Exchange listed company. So there's a lot of things that we've done right. Of course, we've also made some mistakes along the way. But I think where we're really changing the industry is looking at it from a pragmatic, practical view about how do you really change the energy business and start focusing, if you will, on how do you fundamentally not only change and decarbonize energy, but what would those technologies do in terms of additional services that we can't do today with today's energy technologies. And that is a lot more driven by reliability, maybe a lot more flexibility within the home. How do you deal with the electric vehicles being charged up at the homes, which is definitely over 80% of the charging of electric vehicles at the home in the US at least. And I think that's true in Europe. So how do you embrace and take all these technologies and make them work, but yet still understand they have to fit within the centralized system? So we have a vision for the future where the power system of all countries looks more like the internet, where you have a combination of centralized resources and decentralized resources. You got the intelligence at the endpoints of the system. They can go in on and off the system as it's needed because of storms, wildfires, et cetera. But together, it's creating a better solution and, like I said, better energy service at a better price. And so that's the vision of the company, and that's where we are today.
That's great. Can I make a suggestion and just tell a story about hurricanes or the weather in Texas, you know, some example of that where Sunnova has played an important role?
Certainly. So this was really a watershed moment for Sunnova as a company. In 2017, we had entered Puerto Rico, and we really recreated the market for residential solar in Puerto Rico. To this day, Puerto Rico is a very important part of the company as far as one of our main service territories. And that was driven a lot about our view that we were looking around for different areas in the country and in the United States that, for whatever reason, were not given solar service. And you know, we saw Puerto Rico as being one and really the best example of something that had fundamentals, high energy prices, power prices, very dirty power with oil-fired generation, and the reliability was terrible. And we looked at that and said, well, why don't we go in? Now, a lot of the barrier there was Spanish-speaking. We're in Houston, Texas. We have a lot of Spanish speakers, and we've deliberately hired a lot of folks. To this day, a good portion of our contact center is bilingual, both Spanish and English. So we enter the market. We start building it out. Very difficult. We got to fight with the utility and everything else that doesn't like the competition and all that other stuff. But when in 2017, a hurricane came by and just glazed the island, and the power system went down almost completely. They stood it back up relatively quick, and then the big one came a few days later. It was Hurricane Maria, and it devastated the island. We knew what kind of devastation it would wrought because we saw what was happening with Irma, which was the hurricane right before it. We got on top of things. It was it really was very much a lot of a humanitarian disaster. Clearly, we didn't know how many of our employees were not fine. You know, could have even been killed, as many were. Thankfully, everybody was fine. We made sure that was the case. We sent in supplies, we sent in materials, new panels, inverters, et cetera, and then worked out a deal with the governor to supply batteries and then have attachment of batteries, which were very new technology. We bought all the batteries we could in the entire world, and it wasn't that many, unfortunately. Sent them all to Puerto Rico. And then from here on out, I agreed with the governor, we're going to have a battery attached to every single home. And then we're going to go back to our old customers, and we're going to try to upsell them batteries so they can have that reliability. And that really changed the U.S. power business forever. And I knew it at the time is like, this is really going to get batteries talked about. It's really because people see, okay, this is something that really means something to people. And this technological change means that people can have a better life. And that's what this company is all about. So we had that experience that we learned a tremendous amount from, how to respond to large scale natural disaster. Nobody had ever stood up multi-thousands of residential solar systems and repaired them and put them back in service ever in the history of the world, which sounds dramatic, but that's what we did. And then when we saw go to another event that was more in our backyard, literally, the freeze, the winter storm Uri hitting in February in Texas and going through that and having people understand that they thought, well, this is Texas, the power always stays on. No, it doesn't. And we came close, very close to system-wide a blackout, basically, or drop in the entire system, which has not happened in this country. We've come close a few times, even in my career, and we came close that time, real, real close. But it didn't happen. But people saw the fragility of the system and looked around, and they're doing that now in increasing numbers in Texas, going, what are we doing? We're using the same technology we've had for, in many cases, over 100 years, but yet we're advancing technology across in telecommunications and medicine. We're doing all these things. Why don't we take the same technology, the digital technology, solid state technologies, and push them into energy? We can get a lot better energy service. And that's what is happening in Texas. People see the need for the change, and they're moving and engaging in the change. And then we're looking around, and especially in Houston, and going, okay, well, we have the oil and gas industry. Why don't we take the new energy industry? We want to run that and lead that as well. And that's really I'm pleased to see that change in mentality. Is like, we see the energy business changing. We want to be a part of leading it.
So, John, what are the opportunities, but also the challenges that you see in the residential solar market as a whole today?
Well, there's enormous opportunities in that in the U.S. that we're maybe 4% penetrated from the single family homes. In Europe, it varies by country, but the penetration is also, it's ahead in many cases of where the U.S. is. but there's still, it's fairly low. It could be, you know, low single double digits. It could be maybe closer to 30% or so, but you still have an enormous amount of growth rate left to go. And that's on solar. Now, when you take batteries, you take EV charging, you take any sort of like load management, a lot of other new technologies that we're just getting into, well, then you've got a whole lot more growth to go, right? Both in the States and in Europe and in Asia and elsewhere. So we've just gotten started, basically. So there's an enormous amount of opportunity here. There's an enormous amount of opportunity to go back to the previous solar customers like we have and upsell them batteries and EV charging and you know, maybe a generator, maybe a fuel cell. That's another thing we're involved in and trying to get that technology commercialized for residential homeowners across the world. But the challenges are getting people to understand, you know, we're here, and that getting the word out, get them motivated to call us up, or you know, take the phone call, or go on the internet, whatever the case may be that they want to do, and sign up, and go through that process. I think it's the biggest challenge we have. The other challenge is we have a regulatory system, at least in the United States, that's not sustainable for the new technologies. We're going to have to change. And the utilities are going to have to change in a big, big way. And of course, people don't really like to change very much. And so the utilities are no different than that. And we're going to have to find a way forward that we can say, look, the technology of solar and batteries and these other technologies is fundamentally different. It's decentralized. The fuel itself, for the first time, is decentralized. It's the sun. And then you want to take the conversion technology, making it from a BTU, if you will, to a kilowatt hour or a megawatt hour. That's decentralized. It works just as well to have a panel on your rooftop or a bunch of panels on a utility scale solar farm way out in the middle of nowhere. It's the same conversion rate. That's different. We've never had that before. If you go back and you look at all the different fuel sources and conversion technologies, steam engines, et cetera, this is different. And so therefore, the business model is going to be completely different. The electric vehicle that we're a part of, you know, do you really want to go off a highway and fill up on anything, oil or power? No, no, nobody really wants to do that. They'd love to have their car filled up for them while they're eating, where they want to eat, while they're sleeping in the hotel, while they're sleeping in their home. There's a lot of things that we need to do and look at our business and say, let's change it up completely. So that's a great opportunity to say, look, we're not just going to take what we have and decarbonize it. There's a lot of other services and other exciting things we can do with new business models that we can go in and address what consumers really want. It's about the individual. It's about the consumer at the end of the day. What do they want? What do they want more out of their lives? And focusing on that, that's the biggest opportunity, but it's also the biggest challenge, because you got to go back to those incumbents and going, well, we don't want it that way. We like the way the world is right now. And so it's just, that's a natural, it's with any human, it's with any industry is going undergoing fundamental change like we have now. But it's two sides of the same coin, if you will, both the opportunity and the challenge.
Great. Given some of those dynamics that you've just mentioned that are present today, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what excites you most about the future for your industry and for Sunnova.
What excites me the most is that I think we're on the verge of changing the energy business materially and for good. And I think decarbonization, which is something that we mostly talk about, but also decentralization is happening as well. And that decentralization gives us a new services that we can offer consumers that we couldn't offer before, higher reliability. For instance, we're all more familiar with work from anywhere, as I call it, work from home. And now people have a degree of freedom that we haven't had. My opinion is that we were headed in this direction anyways. The pandemic accelerated that. And therefore, the pandemic is accelerating in my business as well. Because when you're sitting at the house and you are on the video camera, whatever that is, Zoom, Teams, or whatever, the thing you have is connectivity and power. So if power is going out, you can't live. You can't work. You can't live or work where you want to live. And so something When you look at the changes of the energy business, we're going to enable a lot of other changes in other people's lives and consumers' lives. So I think that's very, very exciting. Of course, the biggest one is that we're addressing climate change, that we're a part of the solution, that we are pushing forward and saying, look, what we want you to be able to do is live your life even better, not make sacrifices. Because I don't think people really, and when you look across the world, are really going to make a lot of sacrifices just for sake of climate change. Should they? Yeah, I think they should. Are they? I don't think so. I think just being practical about that. So this is where technology, this is where Sunnova comes in and says, we're going out to the entire world. We're going to pick the best technologies and we're going to integrate them. And then we're going to back them up with service. And we're going to make sure that service is something that fits your life. And when your power's out, you're not waiting 48 days to never to get it fixed. You want it fixed 5 minutes ago. So we're accelerating that service, that repair, because things happen. And you've got a lot of different technologies on the home. You got a battery, you got inverter, you got panels, you got conduit, you got fuses. You got a lot of different things that are going on, and more are showing up, which is great. That's fantastic. But that means more failure points, more things that go wrong, more finger pointing back and forth if it was individual installers and so forth. And we're putting all that together and saying, we'll stand behind it. We are the wireless power company, and we'll be there for you and make sure the power flows. And then you can live your life the way you want to live. And we call that living life uninterrupted, or powering energy independence. And that's what we want, and that's what we think we're providing the world. And as technologies continue to change, we'll be able to add even more to that. And then as we change our service levels and make them even better and better and quicker and quicker, then I think that a lot more people will refer their family and friends, and then hopefully even start spreading to different countries, which I think is interesting in that I don't think this is a U.S. desire. This is a global desire. This is a global business model that more and more of the countries are going to and saying, this is what we want. We want a residential service providing model that can give not only decarbonization, which is where we all started, but that decentralization as well, to provide that additional service, that better service to consumers globally.
John, on the point of decentralization, could you talk a bit more about the role of households in generating energy? There's a concept of microgrids. Could you talk a bit about that?
Certainly. I think from the very beginning, I found that taking a rooftop, whether that was on a warehouse or a big industrial building or commercial or residential rooftop, would be utilizing something that was not being utilized before. So it's fine to do the utility scale projects and to put the clear the land and try to maybe have some usage of the land underneath the panels and so forth. But by and large, really claiming that land for generation of solar power, that's fine. But it also leads to other issues as far as what else could you do with that land? How expensive is that land? Are there any environmental impacts on that land? Little hard to come up with an environmental impact on a rooftop. You've already made the environmental impact by building the structure in the first place. So this is a more intelligent usage from an environmental standpoint, but from an economic standpoint as well, because that roof is already there. Now you may need to redo the roof because you have a long-lived asset like solar panels and system that's going to go on the roof, and we do that. And we look more and more about how do we do a better job of identifying that a rooftop could be replaced before we do the installation of the panels. But I think that, you know, when you look at behind the meter, it's a much more, in terms of solar behind the meter, it's a much more intelligent use, both environmentally and economically, than doing so on the utility scale side. However, both are needed, to be clear about it. Both are needed. But I think that's a real exciting part of the industry that the residential rooftop solar industry can provide. The other thing is that is fuel for batteries, and batteries are going to give you that reliability at home that we've talked about, of how you live your life uninterrupted, how you can do what you want to do, how it gives you more capabilities in life. Like for instance, EV charging. This is a big problem because you're going to have neighborhoods, and we're already starting to see this where everybody's getting at least one EV. I already have two now. I have four kids, so that should, you know, I'm going to get a third one. But how do you handle that charging? Well, the utilities say we've got to put a lot of money and we've got to upgrade the system. Well, in many cases, what they don't say is that's not possible. That's not practical economically and so forth. There's a better way of doing this economically and faster. And that's really key. And that is going back in and putting the storage there, making the generation there with the load, which is the home, which is the EV. And that is going to make the system more robust, resilient. So having a combination of things, of centralized power and decentralized power, is the most environmentally efficient way of going, the most economically efficient way of going, and the most time efficient way of going about making this transition together. Now, part of what could happen is that you have what we call microgrids could form. So maybe a way of looking at this, we have a partner in Lennar, which is the United States' largest home builder. We bought a business from them earlier in the year, and they're looking at how do you take master plan communities and maybe you connect them to the grid, maybe you don't in terms of the monopoly system, but how do you make that master plan community, that new community, how do you make that more resilient? How do you make it more clean, environmentally friendly, addressing what consumers want? And that's where I think we can get into having all the homes plus common areas, maybe some of the commercial, the stores, the coffee shops and so forth that you go to, work together, be much more decentralized so that when something happens, like Winter Storm Uri, another hurricane, which is going to happen, we just don't know when, all that means that the community itself is better. It's more resilient. It's serving the needs of the homeowners and the members of that community. And I think we're going to go there very, very quickly. And you know what? That's almost, if you understand the history, especially the U.S. power system, it's not ever been this master planned grid system. First of all, we don't have a grid system in the United States. It's multiple types of grids. And what happened was there was entrepreneurs in early days, call it over 100 years ago, that would basically form these, quote, utilities and run wires to different homes and businesses. And then they started getting up into the large transmission lines and they throw lines back and forth to each other if the CEOs liked each other. If they didn't, they didn't. And it became this hodgepodge that we have today. And so this is a bit of a back to future. It says, well, maybe we should create these microgrids or these mini utility systems that are more resilient, and then maybe we connect them, which I think we should, or maybe we don't. Maybe there's not a reason to connect them, or it's not economically efficient to connect them, whatever the case may be, but it gives more optionality and more flexibility to the power delivery system in the United States. And I think that spreads to other countries as well. So it's we'll see where it goes, but I think there's a lot of exciting opportunities and options available to us with these new technologies.
John, that's a really exciting idea, linking together decentralized energy sources into combined networks and the sort of resilience that can offer us in the future. I've heard about this sometimes referred to as virtual power plants. You know, it must be kind of tricky, must be a lot of software that are involved in this. I'd love to hear a bit about your view and what Sunnova is doing in this area.
Certainly. So Sunnova is essentially services, software, aggregation. And so if you have those three and you can look to see back in our publicly available materials, we've talked about those three being the tenets of the underpinnings of the company as far as our strategy. And then when you look at the software side of things, we're actually a very, very big software company. We probably should do a better job of communicating that out and saying, look at all these different software pieces that we're not only designing, innovating, but also tying together. And then importantly, tying other people and other companies' software into our platform. And you're going to see more and more of that. A great example of this is the ChargePoint partnership. They have a software platform that's integrated with all the auto OEMs and other EV charging networks out there. So an EVgo and so forth that's in the United States. And what we're able to do is tie into that software network or platform with our software platform and be able to provide services to the customer, not only at their home, but elsewhere as well. So as they drive their vehicle elsewhere, you'll be able to charge their their power usage back into Sunnova. So I think these are innovative type thoughts about how you take your software team, which is now one of the largest in the industry in terms of what Sunnova has, and then design and continue to innovate on the software side of things. Part of it is when you go and look at how do you tie things together is when you look at virtual power plants, we have some software, but we're also tying and are in the process of doing that other companies' software pieces together. We collaborate, partner with other folks that may have only the grid virtual power plant software as what they do, and then utilize that and kind of think of it as some people call it hub and spoke type software platform for the industry. I call it a patchwork quilt because you're patching all these different software platforms together. But I do think over time, we're going to see this as a software platform for grid services or VPPs, as we call them, come together and really be something that's wide ranging, but what also can take in any equipment. It's not going to be specific to a one equipment manufacturer or another. And that's where the industry wants it to go. That's where the utilities or the independent system operators, regional transmission organizations, they all say, look, I need to be able to operate Teslas and Generacs and Enphase and SolarEdge and all the other different technologies. And there's so many different equipment providers and more are coming. Literally almost every month, more are showing up from Asia, from Europe and so forth and coming into the US market. So when you look at all that, you want to have the ability to have a platform that can take all of those different technologies and then give them the right kind of capabilities to the service providers, who then in turn are working with the utilities and the regional transmission organizations or ISOs to say, what do you need? Most of the time what they need are three different things. One, they need capacity. What does that mean? That means that, as strange as it sounds, utilities have been taking all of these, gigawatts of power and that is behind the meter on solar, on people's homes, and now the batteries too, and not counting it, not counting them. That's crazy. Well, they don't have the really the way of doing that. And so now that we're moving forward, they're finding ways to do that and saying, look, what I need is I need you to send me the information that those batteries and solar systems are working and that they'll be there when the grid when we really need it. In terms of when something's happened to our generation resources or demand has gone way up because of a winter storm or some other event, it's really hot outside, whatever it may be. And so we're taking that software and engaging those utilities and those regional transmission organizations and saying, here are the assets. You can point to them. These will work when your system or your resources will not work. The second one is energy. Most people think about that as we can provide energy into the monopoly of the grid system. Again, utilities or regional transmission organizations. And so that's starting to really kind of gain a foothold as well. It's like, okay, so I could count on these resources to deliver energy, not only to the home where they may be on, but to other folks that are on the grid as well, that again, they need those resources. The last is what they call ancillary services. This is to basically take centralized resources, which need to be balanced much more so than decentralized resources for just the physical reasons, and be able to provide things that there's a variety of different ancillary services, spinning reserves, a bunch of different things, voltage stability service, a bunch of these things that basically make the entire grid work. It's not just providing the raw energy. There's a lot more that goes into it. And it's pretty complicated on the physics side and everything else, but trust me, it's definitely necessary. But it's a smaller opportunity just given by definition of when you look at those three services to be able to provide. So as we look at, and I think the simple way of looking at this is when people start talking about VPP, you'll hear that virtual power plant. When they start talking about grid services, what they're meaning is that it is basically the way that utilities and RTOs and ISOs come together and say, look, this is how we're going to integrate decentralized resources and centralized resources. That's a simple way of looking at it, is how do you get to that internet of the power system? And this is the pathway and the best way that they can verbalize that need and that that path to get that integration of decentralized and centralized resources.
That's great, John. Thanks very much. Now, the last question I'd love to ask you for today is, what role do you think asset managers as a whole can play in the fight against climate change and, you know, through environmental solutions companies like yourselves?
Well, I think without the asset management community, this is not going to happen. In terms of change, isn't going to happen. You have to make a conscious decision to invest in new companies, companies that are bringing the innovations to the marketplace. Without the capital, I think this is but without the capital, we couldn't do anything at Sunnova. And we certainly have enjoyed and needed to build relationships such as with you all to go out there and find the capital, because it takes so much. Energy is a capital intensive industry, and bring that capital into the company and then, of course, use it efficiently and wisely to forward our business plan and to change and decarbonize the energy industry and to change the energy industry to make it more, what consumers need and what they want with the new technologies. I think that asking the right questions as an asset manager and a portfolio manager is really helpful. It's very helpful for me to have these types of conversations, because there's a lot of things that I can pick up in the conversation and in the questions that are very helpful in gathering a lot of the different viewpoints from the marketplace, from other asset managers, and gives me a stress test on some of the strategies that we're putting forth or we're thinking about doing. And I think that's incredibly helpful when you couple that with what's going on in the field. What does the customer want, or the potential customer want? What is the labor want, as far as, like, for us, it's dealers, right? What is possible on the technology side versus it sounds great, but it's not here yet. There's a lot of things out there that could be happening, might happen, but there's very few that actually will happen at the end of the day. And I think having the conversations with the asset managers and the portfolio managers across a wide swath is particularly those that really do their homework, they're involved in the industry, like BNP Paribas. I think that's very, very helpful to make sure we're going down the right paths and make sure that we're making the difference that we want to make in the marketplace. Part of this is also incumbent upon the asset managers, portfolio managers, to really say, don't just go pick a de facto success story and just buy the stock. I mean, maybe you do that, and that's also part of success, right? But what is it that's really going to bring about multiple companies that are all fighting and trying to get the right ideas, fighting for the customer, going out there and making things happen? Because, you know, even those that are global leaders in this have said, I cannot do this alone. I need other companies to come in and make this happen. I will say that again. We need other companies. We even need competitors. Competition's a good thing. It's a great thing. We want to. That's why we want to have more choices in power, not just have the utility or monopoly there. We want more choices, more competition. We can't do that if everybody just goes and buys the de facto stock out there. That doesn't help anybody. These are new ideas. There's a lot of ideas that are not going to come forth in government. I don't care what government it is. At the local, state, federal level in the United States, or multiple other countries' government. And that's the beauty of the marketplace. That's the beauty of what we see out there. And what we need help in is making sure there's multiple companies out there. Some will fail, some will succeed. Some are great ideas, some are not great ideas. The marketplace is the best way to sort all this out versus an edict from one government agency. And what you can do is you can go out there and you can do a lot of hard work, which I know you all do, and you can go out there and try to find. And you're not going to hit every one of them, and that's okay. That's a part of this. But when you're out there looking for all these new companies and you're providing capital to these new companies, then innovation is going to quicken. And you've already seen some of that over the last 24, maybe 18 months globally. And I think that we're just on the cusp of that. This is going to blow wide open as far as the energy transition, new energy, whatever you want to call it. And having that capital that's worked hard to try to find something that's unique, that's different, that maybe not everybody sees out there, and backing that company and making sure that that capital stays available, not just a one-time deal, but it's always coming back. And you're listening to the company, but you're also providing critiques to the company and ideas to the company. I certainly get a lot from you all. That is very helpful. And at the end of the day, is necessary for us to meet our climate change objectives and to change the world of energy.
Thank you, John, so much for coming in today to spend time with us, to talk to us and our audience about yourself, about the industry, and of course, about your company and all the important work that you're doing. So thank you very much again.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, John.